Welcome to ITE 1, Module 13. And this is on troubleshooting laptops. So during the course of your career, you'll be expected to know how to configure, repair, and maintain laptops.
Hang on just a moment.
And
let's find out if these guys have any questions on anything before we get started. Probably not, but let's just make sure.
Does anybody have any questions on previous modules or labs? Take that as a no.
That's usually the case here.
Okay, so welcome to ITE Chapter 13. So during the course of your career, you'll be expected to know how to configure, repair, and maintain laptops and other portable devices. The knowledge you acquire about desktop computers will help you service these devices. However, there are important differences between the two technologies. Laptops and portable devices use wireless technology more than desktops to facilitate mobility. All laptops use batteries when they're disconnected from a power source. Docking stations are commonly used to connect a laptop to peripheral devices. Required to configure these docking stations and accessories allows the main device they accompany.
Your many laptops is cutting you off, so I think you're going to need to lower it in the setup. You're doing a fantastic job so far.
It's set up while I'm recording, right?
Huh? No, Ventrilo
I can,
setup.
I can hit
back.
Setup while I'm recording, Kent.
Yes, you can.
You can do that while you're recording. Otherwise, we'd be in a heck of a lot of trouble.
We haven't got as far as I thought we would have gotten yet. Have we introduced?
He's adjusting. Yeah, we've introduced the module. There's no questions on the labs. He has started on a little bit of it. He's just his sensitive. His words are cutting him off, so we're having him fix that.
Unfortunately, he's got a lot of noise behind his microphone, so we'll get started in about 15 minutes or so once we figure that one out.
Well, we already kind of got started, I'm saying. We just...
I can repeat if I have to. When I shift-tab in the Ventrilo box, the sensitivity is the second slider, isn't it?
No, that's not what I'm talking about. Do you have the hotkey turned off? Are you on AutoVox, or are you trying to hold something down?
Yeah, no, I'm on AutoVox, yeah.
I mean the edit box that says sensitivity, it's a number. It's an edit box, it's a number. You need to lower that.
That's in setup, right?
Yeah, and it's tab forward.
You can tab forwards.
Because you've unchecked the use push to talk. So tab forward until it says sensitivity, edit. And then look at the number and drop it down by one or two.
We apologize for the absence of Aiden's brain. It will return shortly. Hopefully the sensitivity works better now.
It's working so far.
Yep, that seems better. To be good. At least you're not doing what Grace does.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose I should start again or continue.
No, just continue.
You were talking about docking stations, so just keep going.
Many laptop components are proprietary, so some manufacturers require that you complete specialized certification training to perform laptop repairs. Servicing laptops can be very challenging. Mastering the skills necessary to work on laptops is important to your career advancement. Of course, in our case, it's slightly different because some of the wires are even smaller than the desktop ones, so working on those can be quite problematic. And there's now a picture of a laptop, a PDA, and a smartphone with a tablet lying around. So does anybody have any questions so far?
God, I hope not.
And now we're on to wireless communication methods. Wireless devices give people the freedom to work, learn, play, and communicate whenever they want. People using wireless capable devices have some advantages. Can people think of advantages of using wireless devices?
Well, there's no wire.
Portability.
perform many common tasks without move around.
Yeah, you're not as restricted without getting strangled when you. Right.
Anybody mention some disadvantages? You know, I don't think they're covered here. Well, one of them is, but not all the disadvantages are covered.
They're harder to upgrade because they're all contained.
How about that they just don't work? And sometimes you can have problems with your internet that you'll... and I'm not talking about anybody here specifically. I'm talking about generally speaking. You can have problems with your internet that you'll blame on your provider when it's your wireless network and the neighbor's microwave. So they're certainly
full of danger. Yeah, or your exercise bike. I mean, I had a friend who, his treadmill, whenever someone used his treadmill, his internet would cut out. And I thought it was like a power drain or something, but it turned out the treadmill was interfering with one of his wireless channels. And I should have guessed it because his phone was doing the same thing. Whenever his phone rang, the internet would cut out. But I thought the treadmill is such a weird one because, I mean, you wouldn't expect that from a treadmill.
I've just got a message here, and I'm not saying who it's from, that says wireless allows various people to use their iPods on the toilet. And I can attest to this. My significant other does, in fact, take her iDevice in with her and, you know, continues playing her Dimensions game.
Nobody gets any privacy in your life, do they?
No.
Well, I guess that would add a new dimension to...
Very good.
Some people choose to read, others, well, choose to take wireless.
Well, exactly. Yes, I've known books I can't put down, but usually it doesn't stop quite there. People don't need to be tied to a physical location to do various activities, communicate, and send emails and things. Wireless facilities, such as internet cafes, and chalked circles on sidewalk, known as, what is it, war something? Not war, I think it's war driving, where you essentially chalk circles on the sidewalks outside companies, yeah. Facilities such as internet cafes and open-air chalk circles are opening in many countries. College campuses use wireless to allow students to sign up for classes, watch lectures, and submit assignments in areas where physical connection to the network are unavailable. This trend towards wireless communications will continue to grow as more people use wireless devices. And we got a picture of different wireless devices. There's a Bluetooth dongle, Bluetooth headsets, a wireless access point, and a satellite. Anybody have any questions so far?
You know, if you've got any questions, type your name into chat and we'll alert Aiden that you've got questions. That will make things go faster, I think.
Probably, yeah. I won't have to keep pausing. Well, the first is Bluetooth technology. Bluetooth is a wireless technology that enables devices to communicate over short distances. A Bluetooth device can connect up to 7 other Bluetooth devices to create a wireless personal area network, or WPAN. Hopefully different than I guess if it fails, that is a fried pan. This technical specification is described by the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, or IEEE 802.15.1. Bluetooth devices are capable of handling voice, music, videos, and data. So, what devices might best be facilitated by Bluetooth? I think everyone's used Bluetooth headsets for cell phones. And I believe some printers are becoming Bluetooth now.
I once used a Bluetooth embosser for a while. That was interesting.
I didn't know they had one of those.
That's I guess they're starting to make real ones now,
you
too.
Could
That's
get one
nice.
Of the. You could get one of those Jedi print things or whatever.
And portable Bluetooth keyboards, like for myself.
iDevices and other small things and laptops.
Yeah, transferring data between telephones and things like what you call it, like you say, iPods and stuff like that to your computers.
Computers, PDAs. It says cameras here too.
Actually, you know where they do use it a lot? I was just going to say where they do use it a lot is, has anybody been to those photo kiosks where you actually go to the photo kiosk and you put your money in and then you send the pictures via Bluetooth to the photo kiosk and it prints them out for you? We've got a lot of those over here.
Oh, that's...
So they've got... Hello, pussycat.
Yes, we have a cat here. Interesting. Oh, wow. Even that's tripping the sensitivity. Well, it must be pretty low now. The distance of a Bluetooth personal area network is limited by the amount of power used by the devices in the PAN. Bluetooth devices are broken into three classifications. The most common network is Class 2, which has a range of approximately 33 feet, 10 meters. Devices operate in the 2.4 to 2.485 gigahertz radio frequency range, which is in the industrial, scientific, medical, or ISM band. This band often does not require a license if approved equipment is used. Interestingly, though, some Bluetooth devices do require licenses. I was not able to actually buy a PDA here and an Icon here in Canada because it had not been cleared by the Canadian Communications Commission. So I was able to buy it for my sister and actually have it shipped here, but I wasn't able to actually buy it here, which I thought was kind of strange. And customs was totally fine with me shipping it, but I just couldn't buy it. Bluetooth standard incorporates adaptive frequency hopping, AFH. AFH allows signals to hop around using different frequencies, thereby reducing the chance of interference when multiple devices are present. AFH also allows the device to learn frequencies that are already in use and to choose a different subset of frequencies. Hopping security measures are included in the Bluetooth standard. The first time that a Bluetooth device connects, the device authenticates using a PIN, or personal identification number. Bluetooth supports both 128-bit encryption and PIN authentication. There's a picture here explaining Bluetooth, giving all the main points of it. Version 1.2 operates up to 2 megabytes a second. Version 2.0 enhances data rate. EDR operates up to 3 megabytes a second MBS. Or MBPS, sorry. Now it's capital M, small b. Carrie, is that megabits or megabytes?
It certainly is. Megabits. Big B's bite you.
Oh, okay. Ah, yes, of course. I should have said megabits then.
Oh, and Harold would be scared. Oh. Sorry.
Who's Harold?
Alright, continue on for a moment.
Version 3.0 plus high speed HS operates up to 24 megabits per second. And now there's a picture describing the Bluetooth classifications. Class 1 has the maximum permitted power of 100 milliwatts and operates approximate distance. Class 2, the power is 2.5 milliwatts and it operates up to 33 feet meters. Class 3 is 1 milliwatt and operates approximate distance is 3 feet, or 1 meter.
You seem to be having
questions
braille...
comments?
You seem to be having braille display problems. Is it possible that We can either move this along a bit faster, or one of us can take this over and shift through. This is a long chapter, and we've got a lot to shift through. I think everybody has read their notes.
I guess it's not working out as well as I thought. I can try using JAWS and see if it works better.
We'll talk about this off lecture. It's not relevant for here in the recording. We'll discuss this later, but I think we could possibly shift through material a little faster. So we'll catch up with you. Okay. So basically that is your Bluetooth standards. What they're trying to tell you is that there are three different classes of Bluetooth. There is class 1, class 2, and class 3, and as the classes go up, the distances get shorter, just to confuse you, and the difference between the classes is your output power. They are talking about Bluetooth communicating between various devices, as we've already covered, and they're also talking about the fact that Bluetooth can either use PIN authentication or it can use 128-bit encryption. Has anybody ever seen Bluetooth with 128-bit encryption? I never have.
No. That'd be amazing, though.
Okay. Shall I put myself on AutoVox and see how we go?
Yeah, let's do.
Okay. Now, they're talking about infrared again. Does everybody remember from chapter 6 or 7, I think it was, we talked about infrared. There are three types of infrared. They're basically saying that infrared is unregulated. However, the IRDA does actually set the standards. There's three different types of infrared. There is your scatter type, there is your directed, and there is your... Actually, there's four types. Line of sight, which is the ones where you point the remote control at the TV and try not to shoot through the dog, because infrared doesn't go through the dog. Scatter is where you bounce it off walls and stuff, which means you can bounce it off a wall and change the channel on the TV behind you, which is kind of cool. Reflective is where you actually bounce it to a transceiver and send it back to the other one. And then you've got broadband optical, which they don't really talk about a lot here. Infrared is used for low-speed data communications, direct line of sight, that sort of thing. You tended to find that infrared was used on a lot of printers, and in fact, a friend of mine actually printed a page to his printer that said, "Help, help, I'm trapped inside this infrared printer," just to make the point that this printer was actually broadcasting its infrared out and was tripping his laptop off every couple of minutes. So, infrared's really good for connecting laptops and stuff, and it's got to be close to the laptop. So, don't try doing infrared over long distances. They're really hard to line up. If anybody has any questions,
close,
type your name in
chat. It can't be too close.
That's right. Yeah, it's got to be about 6, 12 inches away. And you've got to basically line up the smooth windows if you're vision impaired, which can certainly be quite a challenge. So you plug things in, and Windows XP installs the default drivers, except for when it doesn't, and then you go scouring Chinese websites to get them.
It was the very cool thing before everybody had wireless to be able to pick up your laptop and walk over to the printer and print without a cable. That was actually really nice.
Yeah, look, I'm a bit of a... I'm a bit anti-wireless, actually, and I've been using wireless since the early days of Be Wireless, and when it works, it's absolutely amazing, but especially when people have been trying to lecture and stuff for the Academy, we've had all sorts of problems where interference has got in, especially when, you know, people are throwing signals, you know, through a number of walls and a lot of space. It can be really bad. We actually had a situation once where we were too close to the access point, and we actually had to move like 5 meters away before the wireless would work properly. Certainly something to be aware of. They're saying that scatter is slower than the regular stuff, and the data transfer rates are slower, but the distances are certainly shorter. There's not much on the test in infrared. I think they ask you to identify an infrared device or similar, but they're not generally going to ask you about the specific types, if my memory serves. And there's a figure that shows you all of those that you don't really need to know about. Now we go back into the cellular stuff, which I'm pretty sure we covered in Module 7, but I think they go into more detail here. I don't know whether anybody remembers, but back in the 80s you had like the bag phones, and they were really cool and they were huge, and if somebody tried to mug you, you just throw your phone at them and that would flatten them. They were big, heavy, you had to charge them up every night, and they were very much analog, which is your 1G cellular signals. Obviously cellular data has gone a lot better since then, although it depends on which bit of the US you're in as to how good your cellular service is, and we seem to have a better run of cellular service over here than you guys do, depending on where you are, of course. Interestingly enough, I'm not going to cover this in great detail, but the US is starting to look at capping data on cellular networks because the underlying data infrastructure cannot handle the thousands and thousands of droids and iDevices that have come online. Any questions or comments before I continue? You can connect your laptop to cellular networks with adapters, and they can either support GSM, GPRS, quad band. You can also do SMSs on them, and MMSs as well on certain dongles. Just out of curiosity, Sean, can your MiFi do any of the SMSs and stuff, or it doesn't do any of that?
If it does, I don't know. I mean, I think I theoretically have a quote-unquote phone number, like, for account purposes, but I don't think it does any of that.
I wonder about iPads.
It didn't say anything about it in the manual, so I'm assuming it doesn't.
Okay, so obviously as the cellular data... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I wonder about iPads, if they do MMSs or and text messaging or anything. Because, I mean, if they have the same system as the iTouch, they would have the phone app, too.
I don't know, actually.
Like, you have the iDevice message, but I don't think iPads and stuff can and iPads can do actual SMSs and stuff. I don't think the carrier...
Even the one with the SIM slot in it, I wonder? That's an interesting question.
I don't think so.
And they occasionally ask you a question on these in the test. Basically, cellular is still considered high-speed access because it is faster than dial-up, unless you're on, like, 2G cellular, and that's just... So, obviously, that will certainly be problematic. Has anybody got any questions on any of that stuff? Any of the wireless, Bluetooth, infrared? Is anyone at all confused in any way, shape, or form on those three different standards? Alrighty, you've all been confused into silence, or you know all about it, so that's all good. Okay, now they're going to rehash the wireless networking standards, and they basically tell us that there are four standards, not in this order, but BANG is how you remember them, B-A-N-N-G, although they did come out in A-B-G-N, which just A-B-G-N-N, which just doesn't sound as good. Scrambled BANG, yes. So B wireless is basically 11 megabits per second with some fallback rates. A wireless is in the 5 gigahertz band, up with some of the N, but I'll come back to that in a second. And G is 54 megabits per second with fallback rates, and operates in the 2.4 gigahertz band, along with microwaves, Bluetooth, various decked cordless phones, wireless headsets,
baby monitors.
So you can expect a fair bit of interference. For this reason, it is vitally important that if you want trouble-free wireless connectivity, that you pick the right channel so that you are on the quietest channel that you can have in your neighbourhood. When I moved into my flat in 2006, there were no wireless networks in the area. Now, there are 9. Now, the other thing they're saying is unsecured wireless network is a bad idea because people who are driving around will steal your internet. In Australia, this can be quite costly, especially if you're charged by the gig or the meg. Make sure you enable WPA if the devices support it, or even better, WPA2 if the devices support it. If you can't enable WPA or WPA2, you probably want WEP, but it's not particularly secure. Beware of ancient Braille note takers that have bad wireless drivers / implementations that don't support all of the encryption modes you might want. Oh, that was interesting. So be aware that some... some wireless devices don't want to talk to other wireless devices, as you will find when you try to connect your iPod to certain wireless networks. They just won't do it. I'm not allowed to be technical, but there is a way to fix that. Moving right along. So obviously because wireless is going to be thrown out in a donut shape around your house, because that's actually the shape of the distribution of your stick-up-in-the-air wireless antennas, you will basically have anybody who was in the range of that wireless theoretically able to connect to it. So you need to set good security keys and good passwords. Setting no password or setting the password to love, sex, secret, or you or your significant other slash pet's name is probably not going to keep your friends off your wireless. So be aware of that, and maybe that's okay, but maybe it's also not. Don't steal people's wireless networks just because their network is open. This is theft. I say this every semester and nobody listens to me. You are stealing. The fact that you leave your front door open, does that give people the right to walk into your house and empty your fridge? I wouldn't think so, so don't treat wireless the same. Okay, rant ends. I'm a bit passionate about that. People do tend to steal things without realising it.
I love the people that we actually talk about stealing things.
It. Yeah, we actually had a lawyer who was a friend of mine's sister. And she's like, oh, I hate it. I'm in the flat. And at 11 o'clock at night, they turn the router off and I get disconnected from the internet. And I'm like, hang on. Whose internet is this? Oh, the people upstairs. I'm like, you're a lawyer. You're stealing. Oh, no, it's not really stealing. It's unsecured. I'm like, no, it is stealing. And we actually guilted her so much that she went and got her own internet access. But it took some doing. I was a little bit disturbed, to be honest.
Yeah, when it comes to wireless, people just don't care, and they will justify it.
Well, because most people equivocate stealing with actually taking something from someone and not allowing them to use it. I mean, which wireless isn't like, you know, a ring. You can't take the wireless and leave them without. Well, unless you torrent, but
and people do. No, this is
someone used it. He said, "Oh well." And I'm changing the channel, and it's going to make things on their network, and it's going to make things work better. And I'm like, okay, you're just being a real tool right now.
Yeah, let's not get too mired in the moral debates of whether stealing or not. Although I did find a funny story of how some friends of mine actually had trouble with their router, managed to log into the web interface, reconfigured the router, re-put on encryption, did all this stuff, and then realized that their modem had actually been hit by lightning, and they went next door and knocked on the door of the record shop and apologized most humbly to the owners of the shop and said that they'd had just had their wireless network reconfigured and secured and they were terribly sorry. Would they like some help to actually put the security on their other machines now, and that they would never ever reconfigure that network again, because both networks were called Netgear. Is anybody running the default SSID? I suppose you probably really don't have to own up to this, but you really shouldn't be.
I'm not. That's the thing that comes up when your network is shown on a computer or whatever.
Absolutely.
That's the one, and where you can set it to interesting things like connect and die. Usually you can, yes. They certainly let you change the ESSIDs on the routers. You log into the router and you can actually change it. Usually, with the ISP though, usually the code is written on a sticker that's on the side of the router, the default wireless code, so unless you go in and reconfigure, and some of them you can't go in and reconfigure, it's a good idea to get somebody to read you off that code or you won't be able to connect to the wireless network, and it's usually like 8 digits of hex, which is like really tedious. So write it down in a safe place, TM, so that when you need to add another device, like the grandkids' iPod, you will have that code so that you can add more devices in. Okay. The next section of the chapter deals with satellite, and it says that satellite is quite useful in rural areas. It's relatively fast. There's bi-directional satellite communications. However, test question, it can be affected by the weather. Satellite can be affected by the weather. The weather affects your satellite. reception, okay? You need a dish, and you need somebody to line the dish up properly. You can point it in approximately the right direction, but unless you've got like a signal meter and stuff to sit in the focus of the dish, you really... It's not one of those things that you would generally just like, oh yeah, I stuck the dish up on the roof and now we're watching Russian television. It's a little bit more complex than that. And if your dish is off, you will certainly get reduced performance and speed. Has anyone had anything to do with satellite communications?
I know people who have had quite a bit of trouble with satellite television for, you know, when the weather's bad and stuff.
We actually had somebody who was on satellite, and for whatever reason, his Skype worked perfectly, and his Ventrilo failed epically. It was the oddest thing you've ever heard. And whenever it stormed, he lost all of his internet connectivity. Downloads are faster than uploads on satellite. That's also true for DSL, but it's worth mentioning. You get more on the downstream than you get on the upstream. Back in the bad old days of satellite, you used to be able to get a card for your PC, and you'd plug this card into the PC, and you would be able to sniff everything coming off the satellite, and you would be able to get everybody else's downloads. Boy, oh boy, were there some stuff in there that the law enforcement agencies would not like to find in your house. So, yes. That was quite nasty. Do we want to do the interactive activity? There's some descriptions and there's some things that you've got to match them to.
Sure.
How about I just read the... Let's do it. So everybody, if you're not in chat, be in chat. I'm going to read the description and you're going to tell me what technology it is. That sounds really good to me. Creates a wireless personal area network, WPAN.
What are we answering?
Yeah, type it into chat. That. Bluetooth, go. Well, that's one of the answers. Anybody else think it's Bluetooth? Screwed that one up. Okay, how about a short-range technology that uses LEDs to transmit data? Can anybody tell me what that is? Go! Yay! Infrared. Man, you guys are doing well at this. Yes! Allows data transmission over wireless telephone network. Anybody tell me what that might be? Yep, I would have taken cellular, I would have taken 3G, I would have taken HSDPA, I would have taken mobile. Any of those words that are easier to spell than cellular, especially when, you know, you're trying to type really fast into chat. How about a wireless technology for local area networks? And, yeah, Wi-Fi. Yes, Wi-Fi. We used to have a joke when my wife 1.0 got her Centrino laptop with integrated Wi-Fi. She was my Wi-Fi wifey. It was a bit silly, but we found it kind of funny at the time. This was back in 2005.
I love it. Jaws calls my Mi-Fi a Mi-Fi.
Okay. Any questions on the wireless section of the module? Everybody cool with that sort of stuff? What the different technology are and what they do? I think the only other thing I want to add here is that Bluetooth has two different modes of doing audio, and this isn't critically in the learn, it's not in the tests, but I mention it because blind people tend to care about this stuff. One of them is the telephone profile, and the other one is A2DP. If you would like to be listening to your music in stereo on your Bluetooth headset, you need A2DP. So that is just something to be aware of, and one of those things you should be looking at on the box of your system. Okay, now we're going to talk about repairs and stuff for laptops. Now, I'm going to do things in a slightly different order to the notes. The first thing I'm going to say is if the laptop is under warranty, you shouldn't be touching it unless you are qualified to fix it. If the laptop is under warranty, you should not be touching it because it is covered by warranty and it needs to go back to the shop. In Australia, you actually need...
You don't have to. Let them do it.
Yes, and it's free. It's actually free to replace things under... Yeah, let them do their job. Let them fix it. Under Australia, you actually have to...
It just takes months sometimes.
Well, that depends on the shop, and it depends on where you send it back to. But the other thing is that if you get it fixed under warranty, you don't void your warranty. So the next time when something really nasty dies, like the system board, it's going to be far cheaper for you to replace that under warranty than for you to cry about the fact that you voided the warranty because you were in a hurry. You want to obviously check in.
On it?
Go ahead. Yep.
Oh, sorry. I should have done a chat. If you know that whole little cute thing about cleaning the fan, and your user manual says you can, and it tells you how to do it. Do you void your warranty by like opening up your laptop?
Yep.
If the user manual says that, if the user manual says you can do it, you'd need to get in touch with the maker of your laptop to check on that one. Has anybody heard the Clean the Fan single on YouTube? I actually went and bought it off iTunes because that's how sad I am. But has anybody heard that?
Oh, that will get stuck in your head.
Yes,
so
you
bad.
Pointed us to it. It was awesome.
Absolutely. And I
awesome
may have.
As well.
Yeah, there's actually a video.
So the video is like a work of art. It's really good.
So if you've got sighted people who would appreciate that sort of humour, you may want to get them into If You Got to Clean the Fan. And apparently he's got other singles and stuff, but I don't think they're anywhere near as funny. But it is a perfectly valid song and very well written. So it says here, when a laptop or portable device malfunctions, what should you do? Well, my answer to that is panic. No, seriously, it's not panic. That is the general answer to what you do when a laptop malfunctions. And obviously, as a technician, you shouldn't be panicking, and you should be helping your users not to panic. We had a case the other day where a guy came down from upstairs with his laptop and said, "Do you fix laptops?" Morning, Alex. And we sort of said, well, we'll have a look at it. And he's like, the kids have pushed it off the couch. And the screen doesn't work. And we went, oh, dear. So we had a look at it, and he was right. The screen didn't work. And we couldn't get it to log in. And he's like, do you know anybody else who can fix it? Do you know any way I can get this working? I need my laptop. It's really important that I have my laptop. And I'm like, well, you're going to have to take it to the shop, and you're going to have to give them money. And the warranty doesn't cover kids pushing your laptop off the couch. He was not a very happy camper. I suppose, depending on people's financial means and ability, I always recommend that people, if you can, and not everybody can, have some sort of backup device. What happens when the Braille Sense you know and love stops working? Apart from crying and possibly consuming copious amounts of alcohol, how are you going to continue to be productive? Replace BrailleSense with any other device you like. It's not always feasible to have backup devices around, because from a financial perspective. However, if you have the option and you ever get rich, I strongly recommend it. Why does Kerry have 3 netbooks? Your question has just been answered. It means that I always have a netbook. Unless, of course, I have a really bad day and all 3 of them die at once. Does anybody have backup devices that they use around here? Like, has anybody got those sorts of things? Or are we all stuck in the one device if it breaks, we're terrified situation?
If one device breaks, it's bad.
I've got one note taker, but I've got the netbook and I've got computers I can use and stuff.
I've got a couple desktops, and I've got a an old external hard drive that, you know, was cool in its day, 240 gigs. Obviously, that's nothing now, big old thing, but at least I've got, you know, my most important stuff there. And I can reinstall programs and stuff, and I've got ISO backups of my Linux systems, so, and all my Windows data. So that's about how much I can do right now.
Okay, so look, it's a goal that's, I think, is worth working towards, but that's just my opinion. I also have multiple chargers for devices in case I lose a charger or leave a charger somewhere. We had somebody come over from holiday for Melbourne, and they left the charger at home, and I was able to build them up a new charger with the multimeter and everything, and they were very happy camp. Now, there are 2 types of components. There are CRUs, which are customer replaceable units. I'm not saying that 3 times today. I haven't had enough coffee. Customer replaceable units and field replaceable units. Customer replaceable units are units such as, in many cases, but not in all, the RAM or the battery. Not if you own a new MacBook, as people found out the hard way. You cannot do your own battery replacement without special tools. If you are looking at field replaceable units, they are things like system boards, wireless cards, and those sorts of things that are replaced by technicians or agents working for the company. It's worth noting, however, that there is a bit of argument between what is customer replaceable and what is field replaceable. In the original EEPC 701s, there was a warranty void if removed sticker on the door that held the RAM, and ASUS got into a lot of hot water with people going, you put 512 meg of RAM into this thing and you have a warranty void if removed sticker, what gives? And ASUS ended up issuing a statement that said customers were able to upgrade their RAM and that that sticker would not be considered. So, you still need to be careful. Some laptop repair centres specialised in a particular brand of laptops, which reminds me of a really bad joke that went up on Twitter that not all of you would have seen, so I'm going to have to tell it now. I heard about this guy the other day that... apparently he threw his computer overboard, his fishing boat. I asked him what sort it was, and he said it was a Dell rolling in the deep. Okay, moving right along.
That's funny every time, because I'm awful.
Your repair center can either be a Dell repair center, because we're talking about the Dell, which... they have repair centres, or you can have a repair centre that does all different brands. And it depends what the staff are trained in and what they're certified to do. And there's a lab where you get to research a repair centre. So maybe if you have a certain brand of laptop, may I gently suggest that you research the... do you get to pick which one you research, Sean? I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with the new labs.
The repair center lab, you just pick a repair center, local if you can. If you can't, then go online, and it doesn't just find out. You have to find out just what laptops they're certified for, that kind of thing. You're actually researching the repair center itself.
I was going to suggest that if they have a laptop, they should possibly look at a repair center that does their laptop, because that might be useful to them in future.
That's true.
So often they do hardware diagnostics, data transfer and recovery. That is time consuming and it's expensive and it's tedious and it's awful. If you can get the drive out of the laptop and the drive still functions, it's not so bad. If the drive has actually failed, it can be less fun to get data off. If the drive has actually failed and you've got people taking the drive apart and replacing circuit boards and head assemblies and stuff, you can be looking at $240 an hour plus to get your data back off the hard drive. You did have backups, right? Right, good, cool. Hard drive installation and upgrades, although a lot of people do these themselves. I think the only thing I would point out about doing RAM and hard drive yourselves is that, yes, it's perfectly possible. Check whether you're going to void the warranty by doing it, and also be careful, because damage that users do to their equipment is not covered by warranty if somebody can actually tell that you damaged it as a user. Any questions before we continue?
Just a note, just from experience, like on a Dell desktop, when there was a hard drive problem that was under warranty and it was not my fault, and they came in and put a new hard drive in, they wanted to take the other one away and charge me $1,000 to recover data. And when I agreed to let them give it to me to keep, I took it into a computer store with an external hard drive and said, can you recover my data and put it here? And they charged me $50 for it. So that was just experience.
Unfortunately, I don't think we've got the recordings handy, but this would be a good point to be playing dead hard drive noises. But I don't think they're handy enough to do that.
No, I don't have them handy.
There is actually a website that will show you the different noises that hard drives make when they die.
Hard drive sounds, I think, and it's a data recovery firm that did it. And their flash movies, you have to root JAWS to flash start and click, but it is doable. I'm sure at NVDA there's something you can do as well, but
you may want to, if you're using NVDA, you may want to get James Tay's windowless flash add-on, which may help with that. And you can find that on userscripts.org. He calls them Access Grease because they're accessibility enhancement scripts for Grease Monkey. And apparently they do amazing things to the new Twitter web UI that everybody loathes, hates, and detests. Yes, Firefox and NVDA. So you need to get Grease Monkey from greasespot.net. And then you go to userscripts.org, and he's got about four or five A11Y scripts that make Firefox work a lot better. If you're an NVIDIA user,
so you can
really
look up his scripts in particular? So do you, like, look up the name?
Yes. I think you put in Access Grease, and it finds them all, because he's tagged them Access Grease on userscripts.org.
I should do that.
There was a joke going around, lube up your browser. Because these were Access Grease. Well, grease is a lubricant. It's
love
a valid
it.
Joke.
It's true. Entirely accurate.
So if you are an NVIDIA user, I'd really strongly suggest you avail yourself of some or all of those grease spot scripts, because they will make your life infinitely easier. And if you've ever seen movies on pages that go flash start, flash end, and you can't see anything with NVIDIA, even when you drop into Object Nav and press all the buttons on the number pad hoping that it'll read you the right stuff until you press the button that clicks things, then this could certainly be a script that you would want to be interested in. Often they do keyboard
and fan
replacements.
Was that userscripts.org?
Yes, it was. Userscripts.org. They also do keyboard and fan replacement, say to some of our users. If you're careful, you can buy the keyboards off eBay and replace them yourself. Careful not to break the flexi strips as you are plugging and unplugging the keyboards and stuff. Internal laptop cleaning. I'm not going to break in to clean the fan, I promise. LCD screen repair. That is a nasty one. Sometimes the backlights can fail, and if the screen is dark and you can only see it by looking at it from a funny angle because you're looking through the polarizing filter, it's time to get your screen repaired. One of my blind friends actually goes in and disconnects the backlights on his netbooks because it gives him an extra half an hour battery life. Do not do this if you would like sighted people to read your screen.
Just for an FYI, my Toshiba came with a button that lets you turn off the backlight. I think when sighted people are looking at it in bright sunlight, they don't need the backlight. So that was called an energy, and it saves an incredible amount of energy. And now that the button doesn't work, there's actually, I was able to find the utility, and I can just type in backlight and it goes off.
That's really cool. Another tip can do.
Go ahead, Sean.
Another tip you can do really quickly is on some laptops, and this works on mine and someone else's, that the lady I work with, you can use, if you're using Windows 7 or Vista, you can use Windows P. And you can tell the laptop that you are using a projector, and it will say, "Are you sure? I don't see one. Are you absolutely sure?" And if you hit keep changes, then your screen may turn off, including the backlight. And JAWS can act a bit funny when you do that. But if you really are in a situation where you need to save energy, that's one thing you can do. That's also what you do if you want your computer to come out to the huge TV you hook up.
It's also probably mentioning that in the modern brands of laptops, if you're running something that's been built in the last year or two that's using LED backlighting, you will not have incredible energy savings because the LED lighting is much, much, much better and you're only looking at a watt or two for the screen anyway. So your mileage may vary, limit of one per customer. If it breaks, you keep the pieces.
It is good if you're in a situation where you're doing something you don't want people to see, although angling a laptop screen down will also make what you're doing less visible.
Okay, there's a picture of a laptop motherboard, which is an FRU, and a laptop battery, which is a CRU. How do you know if your battery's dead? Well, there's a number of ways. Sometimes you can tell, sometimes you can't tell. If you pull the AC adapter out of it and the laptop goes and the whole thing shuts down faster than I don't know what, you probably don't have a very good battery, or you've got a bad charging circuit. I'm sure everybody's had that from time to time. If the battery is leaky or bulgy, this is bad. We suggest that you go and get that looked at as soon as possible. If for reasons why you would like to get that looked at as soon as possible, please key exploding laptop battery into Google and watch some of the incredibly spectacular, noisy, and highly dangerous don't try this at home kids videos on watching lithium batteries explode, catch fire, and burn to a heap of very hot slag and ash. It's quite incredible.
Oh, God.
We know what Ali will be doing after lecture.
Every once in a while, as you're
using, yes,
make sure that your battery is in good shape.
They're also saying here, get your components from a good source. If you buy stuff off eBay, you may forgo a warranty, and in fact, if you buy aftermarket batteries, you may forgo a warranty. Often the aftermarket stuff is significantly cheaper, and that may be a reason why you're purchasing it, but also understand that you are foregoing your warranty obligations by putting in aftermarket batteries that the laptops have not actually been approved for. Now, does anyone know the difference between retail and OEM equipment?
Retail is sold at stores and contained is more user-friendly, typically, than OEM.
Yeah, normally retail has a box and some shiny manuals and like advertising stuff and gloss and all that sort of stuff. And OEM equipment is usually just the equipment, and sometimes you get CDs with it and sometimes you get drivers. And I remember I bought a Soundblaster Live value card for Wife 1.0. I think they were $85 at the time, and I bought the OEM version. And she said, what's the difference between this OEM version at $85 and this retail at $199.95? And I said, well, this one comes in an anti-static bag with a CD, and the other one has a box and a few books and stuff. And she's like, well, I don't want the box and the books and stuff, so we bought the OEM one. So, you know, be aware, you can go either way. However, you are expected to know how to install it and support it and stuff if you're going to go the OEM route, which stands for Original Equipment Manufacturer, Original Equipment Manufacturer, in case you haven't remembered that. Okay, we've covered the batteries, which is what we're covering here. So if they're leaky, bulgy, not holding charge, if they're nickel cadmium or nickel metal hydride, they suggest discharging them and recharging them. If they're newer style batteries, they've got complicated circuitry that you probably can't second guess, so take it to a battery shop or similar. Lynn and I were having a discussion about this last week because she has some old Braylon Speaks with batteries that are getting a bit long in the tooth, and we were discussing things that you could do about that. The interesting upside of that actually is, yes, it is batteries plus.
Yeah,
the interesting upside
if
is
you have one.
The seals, the type of batteries have got infinitely better since your insert device here have come out. So what you can actually find is that a Braylon Speak that used to run for 20 hours will now run for 30 hours on the new cells because they're,
wow,
you know, much more efficient.
Yeah, my friend saw that. Got his Braylon fixed and it did.
Oh, that's a really good thing to look forward to.
Yeah, literally doubled the battery life.
I tend to, even on the newer batteries, I don't do it every time, but there are times when I will think, okay, I really should run this all the way down every so often. Just, I'm still kind of used to the older batteries.
It's probably good from a reset the battery gauge perspective. I wasn't really going to go into this, but I will now. I don't know how, if you guys have looked at mobile phones and stuff and you look at the battery level and it says 3 bars or 4 bars, and we get people on the train that sort of goes, oh, I couldn't believe it, like, it was down to like 3 bars and like I had 3 bars left and then it like totally went flat, which is I had 3 bars and then it totally went flat, just in case you couldn't understand the Perth accent. And they don't understand that you can't actually tell how much is in a battery unless it's fully charged or whether it has fallen below 90% of its capacity. So what these devices do is they have a gauge. And if you've used the Braille lights and stuff, you'll be familiar with the gas gauge. If you've used other things, there is actually a gauge that you can reset to tell it when it's got full battery capacity. And it does it based on a combination of time and voltage. So what you end up having to do is
and
reset the battery gauge.
I think the Braille light's just time.
I've got a Braille light
M20.
They have both. They have both. They have one that you set yourself, and then one that does seem to go by voltage, at least. Seems to.
Yeah, I'm not going to go into what specifically happens with the different chemistries of battery, because that is so not in our notes, but there are actually voltage drop-offs, and so if you've got a 12-volt battery, it starts at 13.8, it falls to 12 for 90% of its life, and then it falls off from, you know, 11.8, 11.6, and it's when it falls down to 11.8, 11.6, or depending on the device, you will get messages such as, "Recharge now." And that is when
oh
you obviously
God,
need to recharge it.
Me so bad on the ID Mate. That literally, that scared me so bad.
It is pretty scary, actually, because normally it talks like this, and then when it goes flat, it goes, "Recharge now." And it's just
There's like this demon came out. Yes, sir, I will definitely do that.
Do you feel guilty because you haven't recharged?
Oh, absolutely.
Does it sound like it's dying?
Make sure you're using the right battery charger.
Dad left his phone unplugged. He left his cordless phone unplugged to run down the battery, and it was to wake me up in the morning, beeping and beeping.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that either. Make sure you've got the right chargers for the right batteries. Handle them with care. They will explode if they are shorted, etc. Don't put your spare mobile phone batteries in your handbag with your keys and your pens that are made of metal and stuff, because if it shorts out and goes bang, it can blow your handbag and you up. Anybody who wants a funny funny take on batteries blowing up, listen to Patrick Perdue and Derek Lane's AM Talk Zero series, where a guy's talking about how when he walks along the street his battery just blew up and it was incredibly bad. So we'll try and make that available to you all, because it was quite funny. But it is a real danger. And people don't even think that the spare battery for their Nokia phone is going to rattle around and those two contacts are going to come into contact with their keys, and then the battery is going to get very hot, and in bad situations where they don't vent properly, it will actually go bang very spectacularly.
There are actually requirements for taking batteries on airplanes that I don't know if they ever really check this, but they tell you every single battery has to be either in the original packing, unsealed packing, or it has to be in a separate, like you put every battery in a separate baggie or something like that.
That's kind of true to a degree. It's been proven that with the cabin pressures that they run in the aircraft, that is not a significant risk. It's a bit like that you can't use mobile phones on aeroplanes. It's something that they have decided that they're going to do for whatever reason. I'm actually kind of thankful for that rule, because I don't want people yelling along on their mobile phone all the way on my flight. I'd like to get some sleep. But technically there is no reason why they now interfere with aircraft systems. They've been shielded against that. But to get back to the batteries, there is a fear that if the cabin were to depressurize and stuff, that the batteries could become dangerous and volatile, and that those are the reasons behind those laws. I'm not sure how much of those are actually true, or how much you actually follow because it's a law and they tell you you have to. And I certainly don't want to be providing any advice to anybody on that particular topic, because I don't know. Worksheet. Use the internet or a laptop. Laptop store or something to replace to get information on laptop batteries. Good luck doing it for Asus batteries, though. I don't think anybody could find any information on Asus batteries. Yeah, you can't actually get information on their batteries from Asus.
I actually found myself writing in that lab, "This Asus site is a pile," and Grace was like, "Oh my gosh, you just used the word pile in the lab." Pick something other than Asus if you want to keep your sanity.
And then there are pictures of laptop batteries in case you haven't seen one before. I'd be very surprised if you're blind, technologically capable, and you haven't seen a battery. Sorry, I didn't mention, it might have been mentioned before I got here, that did you know that when you're not running laptops off AC power, they work off batteries? They mention that again in this chapter, just in case you forgot.
We were joking around in Chapter 6, and it applies here again as well. You could almost have a really good drinking game by drinking every time they mention that as you read through the chapter. You'd be wasted in no time.
Now, we have a thing where we talk about the difference between port replicators and docking stations. And this is, I believe, in your test, if my memory serves, or at least it was in the 6 or 7 test, I think. Now, the difference between docking stations and port replicators is port replicators often have the ability to have PCI cards and sound cards and those sorts of things in them.
Wait a minute. Port replicators do that?
You can have port replicators with... docking stations generally have sound cards and stuff in them, but the port replicators can have them too. They actually have, like, USB sound cards. You can also put hard drives, floppy drives, and optical drives into docking stations, which is kind of handy. Sorry, somebody had a comment?
No, I just hit the key by accident.
Oh, that's okay. You can do that.
I had a funny experience. Docking stations, as we recall from Chapter 6, some of them have a power button on them that powers the laptop down. Kitty Cat decided to walk along the... we closed the laptop, but she decided to walk along the top of it, hit the power button of the docking station, shut it off, and we were watching a movie on the TV from the laptop. So we had to restart the movie.
Has anybody got any questions, queries, things that they want to talk about so far through? As far as we've gone so far. There's a list of stuff you can get on your docking stations. One of the things I like to mention here is often if you get a docking station for your laptop, you have to check this, but often they have a line in. And this makes blind people that want to record things off various other sources analogly, sort of, that's not a word, via analog, they get very happy when they've got a line in port because you cannot run a line signal sensibly into microphone jacks at all times. It can go quite bad and it's horrible, quite awful. So you can have Ethernet, RJ45, modem, RJ11, S-Video or TV out, and this can be harder to get running than you think, so watch out for that. USB 2.0 ports, external monitors, parallel ports, high-speed serial ports, and IEEE 1394 FireWire, and stereo headphone output, and your docking ports. And the docking port is a proprietary connector that the laptop has and the docking station has, and they've got to be the same, otherwise you can't put that laptop on that docking station. Usually the docking station charges the laptop when you put it on the docking station, which is kind of nifty because it usually it blocks up the rear connectors and you can't actually get at them when it's in the docking station. It was also mentioned to me with some of the Toshibas that if you buy a docking station for a Toshiba, you actually get an extra AC adapter, and the AC adapter is worth like $150, and the docking station, if you buy it, is worth $200, so you better just to pay the $200 for the docking station and get the extra AC adapter.
Oh, that is very good information. Because they're not $150, but they're very expensive. Yeah.
They certainly can be. And it's saying check your documentation, check your supplier, check everything, make sure that it's going to work with your laptop before you go out and buy it. But yes, they can be quite expensive, but they also can be quite useful. And we have pictures of docking stations and port replicators. I have to put my hand up and say that this is actually the first time I've been through one of the new and revised ITE1 chapters, and you all have a treat with these HTML notes. You guys should feel very happy that the notes are in such excellent condition.
They are great.
Loads of fun to put together, let me tell you.
Okay, they just reckon that... Go ahead.
I thought you were still scrolling, but... With the labs in this chapter, these are a lot of research labs. Please provide as many links to what you find as you can. It makes grading these a whole lot easier. If you find a particular docking station, if you can just copy-paste that link from your address bar, that's very helpful. Then I don't have to go Googling to find it if you've already found it for me.
If you find a docking station that's a Fuzzball Zap Bang 9000, we may not know what a Fuzzball Zap Bang 9000 is. And if you can actually provide a link to the website where you found it, we can then go and read the website and make sure that you are actually telling us things that are actually the case. And this certainly holds true for things like the motherboard and system, system building and video card and stuff labs. And obviously, we'd like to see your sources for that, because we've actually got some stuff through that we weren't able to verify, and then we have to go back to the student and ask them, and that wastes your time and it wastes our time. So try and just paste those URLs if you can. It's probably good practice to get into that habit anyway.
Grace will tell you I did it for just about every single question, just because I thought, well, it would be better to put them in and drive her absolutely crazy with them than to not put them in and she might actually need them.
Okay, they're talking about adding storage units, and they're saying most of them are customer replaceable. Unless you actually need assistance to do it, and then they're not customer replaceable. As I've been saying all the way through this chapter, check, because you might invalidate a warranty or something. You've got FireWire hard drives, you've got USB hard drives, and you've got external DVD CD-ROMs. I would just like to point out at this juncture that if you own a netbook, or you're thinking of owning a netbook, or you one day dream of owning a netbook, please put the money aside to get yourself an external CD/DVD drive for your netbook, because it's going to make installing stuff infinitely easier. When something goes horribly wrong and the hard drive crashes and your recovery petition dies in a fire, TM, you may not be able to recover your laptop easily unless you have a drive that can take optical media.
My external happens to be the only drive I own. I don't know if this is an aside
that's really... But do you have recommendations on current network, like for any given reasons?
Not really. We suggest a couple of things to be aware of when you're buying netbooks. One is the faster the chip, the better. You're probably looking at the Atom N450 or the N570 or one of the newer chips that's certainly much better on power than the older ones were. You need to watch out for the HPs because they have one audio jack on them.
Actually,
which
this
means
that I'm using also has one. So look at it before you buy it. Go, if you're going to buy a netbook, go into the store if you can and look at it, because you'll get an idea of, is the keyboard nice? Is the size of it what I'm looking for? The one audio jack is the main thing I don't particularly like about this netbook, and I didn't notice it until I... Well, you know, actually, until I bought it and pulled it out of the box and went, oh, dear.
Yeah, and the keyboard thing is pretty good, too. I got a netbook because, oh, it's nice and small, which was great, and the keyboard, I thought the keyboard was fine, but it was too flat, I realized, and so it made typing very slow and mostly quite trashy. So it's a very good idea to look at the netbook before you buy it and see if it has touchscreens, touchpads and things. What's that?
This particular Asus is pretty good, but... if you want, not all netbooks have Bluetooth. This one didn't, and I thought it would, but I am okay without it. So just pay very close attention to the features and physical features of a netbook that you look at. But they're a lot better now than they used to. I love mine.
I would probably go as far as saying that if you're ever in the situation to be able to get yourself a netbook and you are doing a lot of travel and portable work, they are a very light way of having a lot of computer power at your fingertips. Yes, Sean, I'm looking at you marking labs with your MiFi on your netbook. This is something he wouldn't have been able to do previously if he didn't have a netbook.
Absolutely. I actually end up doing a lot of my stuff for work on a flash drive with the netbook, simply because it doesn't tie up one of the computers in the lab, and I can, if there's a student that needs help and they're on a JAWS computer and there's not one next to them, I can put my netbook wherever I need to be, and I can be close to a student if I need to.
It's also worth mentioning that if you've got netbooks, they you need to be aware of whether there is a touchpad and whether there is a way of turning off the touchpad, because often you'll touch the touchpad and things will jump. And a lot of netbooks have the ability to turn the touchpad off, but it's also worth noting whether you can on your particular netbook or with the particular touchpad drivers. So if at all possible, and it's not always possible, but if at all possible, may I strongly suggest people run a portable version on the demo netbook at the store for a few minutes and assure themselves that this is something that they NVDA. Want to put their money down. NVDA. What did I say?
You didn't say. You said a portable version, and I was like, wait, he didn't say.
Well, there's always system access to go. You can pretty much get that with no speed.
Okay, now they're saying that the laptops in the... The hard drives in laptops, is what I wanted to say, are smaller than the ones in the desktop. Yes, you can get silly little adapters and rails and things that will allow you to put laptop hard drives into your desktop, which makes your desktop a little bit quieter and somewhat cooler if you're into that sort of thing. Cooler in temperature, not cooler as in, wow man, look at my laptop hard drive. Now, obviously, the drives have motors that spin magnetic platters. I would strongly recommend, if anybody's interested in knowing how hard drives work and would like to hear Ian jam his fingers between two very strong hard drive magnets, you want to listen to the hardware description stuff where we pull apart hard drives and all sorts of other things. Has anybody listened to any of those, apart from Sean? It's pretty cool.
They're a little buried, but man, they're off.
I thought they were under ITE 1 hardware descriptions. Or do I need to make more symlinks?
They might be. I can't remember where they were. I listened to them a long time ago.
They reckon SSDs have no moving parts, and because they have no moving parts, they use less... they use less energy. Now, I also read an article somewhere that said that you have to be careful because replacing your hard drive with an SSD doesn't always mean you're going to get better battery life on your netbook. So, buyer beware. You need to be aware of that. They generally are considered faster, high reliability, and up until recently, quite expensive. But I think the price per gig of solid-state storage has now fallen to around about $1, given the hard drive shortage in Taiwan at the moment. So they are actually becoming a viable alternative. And we'll be very interested to see whether this is the leg up into the hard disk market that the SSDs need, or whether we are all going to go back to the old magnetic hard drives once the prices fall again. Now, I believe we've done the CDR, CDRW, DVDR, DVDRW stuff before, the write-rewrite stuff, as we've all covered that, have we? The R1s you can write to once, the RW ones you heat the temperature to Curie heat and change the phase of the crystals with a laser. It doesn't say that in the notes, but that's what you do. And you can write to those 1,000 or 10,000 times, depending on the rewritable media. RE. And the Blu-ray probably is called RE.
It is. BDRE.
I wonder if they're just like trying to have come up with odd acronyms, or whether they're trying to stumble across some eloquence crash words by just having random scrimmages of letters. Now, it's also worth mentioning that some laptops are usually have their optical and stuff drives under the keyboard, and that can be really tedious, and some of them just have them under a panel, so it depends on how you're going to do them. The Acer Aspire 1, the later models of the Acer Aspire 1 made a lot of people very, very unhappy, because to upgrade the RAM, you basically had to remove the back and then remove the system board. And no, you had to remove the back and then you had to pop the keyboard off and then you had to remove the system board and then you could put the RAM in and then you put the whole thing back together. And popping the keyboard off was poking a screwdriver through two or three specific holes and pushing and making sure that you'd released all of the clips. And I wouldn't want to repeat the language that one of my friends used when I asked whether it was possible to upgrade the RAM in an Aspire 1. So you really have to be careful. And some of the Asuses are getting like that with RAM as well. Some of them are really good and some of them are really aren't. I'm not sure whether the marketing pressure has stopped people from doing that. So, you know, interesting to see. Obviously check your device manager if you're installing extra devices, and check your BIOS screen / screens if at all possible to find out what RAM and hard drives and stuff are in there so that you know what you've got. If you don't know how to get into the device manager by now, I'm quite concerned. Although, it actually says in these notes, I need to fix that, it says start settings control panel, hardware system device manage. So I've got to go in and put an R on the end of that. Mm-hmm. And it actually says it twice, it says device manage twice, so it makes a mental note to go in and change the lab. Has anybody got happy feelings from pressing Windows pause break, which gets you into the system dialog and then you can get into the device manager from there? We love that. I actually found out yesterday that apparently with JAWS 12 and earlier, if you hold down the insert key as JAWS loads, it will actually force it into demo mode and bypass all of the authentication stuff. If in case you're debugging authorization problems. Yeah, there you go.
Wow. How in the heck did you find that?
I was talking to a JAWS employee, Freedom employee. Adding more RAM to your laptop is going to make it run more efficiently, generally speaking. This can be the difference between Start, Programs, Microsoft Word, and Start, Programs, Microsoft Word, Document 1, Edit. This is better for your hard drive. You're not relying so much on virtual memory, you're not thrashing your hard drive as much, and you are not using as much virtual memory, and things will tend to be snappier and more stable. One of the interesting side effects of adding more RAM is that, yes, it does make your computer go faster. Generally speaking, however, it does not decrease application load times. It decreases the time for applications to shut down. It still takes an amount of time to load Word or something off a hard disk, but if you've got more memory, when you just close Word, it will just disappear straight away rather than having to page the stuff back out of virtual memory before it closes down. Any questions on adding RAM? Anybody got any stories about how amazing it was to go from 512 to 2 gigs or anything like that?
I went from 512 megabytes of RAM, this was with XP, with my laptop, and I upped it to a gig and a half, and probably more than I needed at the time, but I thought I'd put the max in just to allow for future flexibility, and I think it was... and now I can run virtual machines with Kavi, and I think that's helpful.
Actually, just before we continue, and we know one person that we're not going to single out at all, but has just about everybody got their Kavi virtual machines up and running, apart from Bert, whose hardware might not be up for the challenge? Has everybody else got their virtual machines up and running for the 12 labs?
No.
Okay, it's worth doing, and it's amazing. Just ask some of our happy students. You can mess around with your Windows XP machine and smash all different bits of the registry and not actually kill your regular machine.
In fact, Grace
and I
had
would
a
say
time
that
I'm trying to kill it during the demo that she did. She was like, I don't know a good way to kill it for you guys.
Yeah, she was trying to kill the machine in the demo. It was quite funny. You actually have to change the permissions on the registry keys with setacle and then you can smash them, but I don't know, I think the fear of breaking your equipment is one of the biggest fears that holds people back in the learning environment, because they're terrified that they're going to do something that's irreparable and somebody won't be around for 2.5 weeks to have a look at it, and it's a valid fear. You know, this is terrifying stuff. Virtual machines can make all of that unhappiness less unhappiness, because you can mess with a virtual machine and do whatever you want to it, and go on all those weird and wonderful websites and completely trash the browsers and everything in the virtual machine, and then shut down the virtual machine, blow it away, and bring your computer back to normal.
Be aware that when you do complete our courses, if you decide to no longer study with us, we ask you to please not continue using the Kavi virtual machine.
Yes, we do ask that. We kind of expect that people won't listen to us, but those machines are actually technically licensed for our use, and you're not supposed to go on using them indefinitely. In theory, in practice, well, you know, but we also would ask that you do not, probably more seriously, I mean, reusing them is after you've finished with Cavi is fair enough, but handing them to your mates is also not on. Giving the VMware password out to your mates because they need an XP virtual machine because they're in a jam, that will get the virtual machine password changed if I find out about it. It's really not a cool thing to do.
And we will be very unhappy if that happens.
The RAM in laptops are a small outline DIM, S-O-D-I-M, or a SODIM if you're using JAWS, which used to confuse me quite a bit. They are smaller and thinner and lower profile, and you need to use one of those memory matching tools or a knowledgeable supplier to get RAM from KingMax, Kingston, Memory, Mega Memory, whatever websites. And I just realized how bad a pun Mega Memory was as far as computers were concerned. I'm trying to get over that now. Depending on
time to get over.
Yeah, that's right. Depending on the laptop that you're getting, you may be doing RAM under a easily removable panel, or you might be removing the keyboard. If your wife 1.0 and myself, you will take the computer apart because you're adding in extra RAM, and you'll go through all of the bother of removing the keyboard, and then you'll find that the RAM that's in there is already the 1 gig chip, and you really should have done the one on the back panel first because it was the one that you actually needed to upgrade. And it said that in the manual, and we didn't read it, so that was silly us. Now, I'm not going to point fingers here, but before you install RAM into anything, remove the power and remove the batteries and remove all electricity from the computers. Somebody who is currently connected had a nasty experience when they weren't sure whether this quite happened, and their RAM was extra crispy. Any questions on any of that so far? Okay. Anybody got any comments they want to add in before we go on to preventative maintenance? Is everybody still awake?
So
what? What? What about awake?
No, it's usually up to you to fall asleep before lecture, Ali, not usually during it.
And then, yeah.
Oh, that's true.
What was that about?
Yes.
What was that about front panels and removing for RAM? No.
quite an entertaining lab to read afterwards.
Yes, it was. Preventative maintenance. Laptops are going to be moved around. If you're very unlucky, your kids are going to stick pieces of toast into the optical drive slot. Let me assure you that optical drives do not read pieces of toast. And in fact, after pieces of toast have been removed from optical drive slots, they don't tend to remove optical discs very well either.
Wait a minute,
probably...
whoa, is that actually... Jeez.
Yes.
Just a quick question about optical drives. Does the Victor Stream CD drive work on laptops, do you know?
I believe it does. It is a specialized drive for the Victor Reader Stream, but I believe it is a generally usable drive on anything that can take a USB drive. No, I did hear a story about a 2-year-old attempting to insert a piece of toast into the optical drive slot because she thought the laptop might be hungry too. Luckily,
that's so cute but sad.
Luckily, we were able to dissuade said individual from inserting a piece of toast into laptop slot. With the assurance that big food box that plugs into the wall is what makes the laptop not hungry. So you've got
sharing
to do your laptop.
Sharing is caring, except when it involves computers.
That's absolutely right. You've got to make sure that you do your preventative maintenance on things like dirt and contamination. Spills, wear and tear, drops, excessive heat or cold, and excessive moisture. All right, quick poll, unofficial poll. Anybody, I know I have, anybody accidentally spilled a drink into their equipment? And if so, did you manage to get it back?
I actually spilled
a tiny bit of Pepsi onto the top of my keyboard, and it died.
Yeah.
Though I've heard that actually bathing your equipment, like a keyboard or whatever, will actually fix that.
I did twice with coffee. I don't learn. And the first time was Brownspeak. I poured a whole cup of coffee into it during graduate school at a high crunch time. I opened up the Brownspeak, drained out the coffee, cried over it, woke up in the morning, and it was working long enough for me to back up all my files before it died. The netbook that I think I wrote about on that list, where I was on a cross country car trip and I spilled a cup of coffee into the keyboard, drained it out, cried over it. Most of the keys started working again, except for my navigation keys and like the at sign. Like, I had to keep pasting at signs in. And then I figured out that I could replace the keyboard, and I did it with the little razor blade and the latches and all that. And I was very impressed with myself. I wish I still had that notebook. It was very nice. And the laptop was fine. Like, it's like there was a barrier between the little area where the keyboard sat and the rest of the laptop, of the notebook.
Absolutely. I know somebody who emptied a cup of coffee into a switchboard. They got particularly excited at a particular part of the book that they were reading while they were waiting for the next call to come in, and swiped the coffee over and finished off a whole switchboard. May I suggest, and this is just a general suggestion, and it I know it's a kind of a pain, but if you're going to have your drinks near your computers, which according to this course you shouldn't, okay, right? So I've said that now. But because you are going to have your drinks near your computer, and often you're going to have your coffee near your computer because the world doesn't start without a good cup of very strong, very good coffee, may I suggest that you consider a cup with a lid, which means that they tend to spill faster, slower, I should say. They spill slower, and they are more contained, and they are safer to carry around.
So that's just like a non-slip bottom, and those would probably be good as well.
Another thing that might help is if you can close laptops and keep them out of harm's way, a rubber keyboard would be a very nice thing to have, because they're waterproof, they roll up, and you can even put it on top of the thing or in front of it, and you don't have to have the laptop
open. I didn't know
open
that
even.
Was a thing. Rubber keyboard?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're cool.
They're okay.
Well, I mean, the fact that you can roll them up really small is cool.
The feel of them when you're typing on them isn't so cool. They're sort of a bit bouncy and rubbery, and I think that's what Sean's not enjoying at all.
They're quicker than my keyboard, that's for sure. Or more or less clicky. I also... dry rice helps. I spilt some water on a desk near an iPhone. The water trickled and formed a puddle around the iPhone. I then, of course, stupidly pushed a button and it didn't work, of course. So I bung the thing in a container of dry rice, left it for about 24 or 48 hours, pushed it again, and it was right back to normal.
Thing I
the only thing
you... suggested is kitty litter, that if you leave some... Like, if you want to do a rescue operation onto, like, a cell phone or something like that, it was, like, dropped in the toilet, I don't know, things like that, drop it in kitty litter and leave it for a day or so.
Oh, yeah, because that absorbs stuff, too.
It certainly does. Usually stuff from the kitty. Obviously, the...
Don't put it in your box, but...
No. Obviously, we're certainly advocating different kitty litter for putting your device in. Not you can't be sort of reuse the kitty litter from kitty. That would be very bad. The other thing that's probably worth mentioning is that... with iPhones and iPods and stuff, they actually have a liquid sensor. And if you do spill stuff on a desk and you do manage to dry it out, you will find that the liquid sensor has already been tripped and you will have trouble doing any warranty repairs because they will say water damage, go away. So just be aware of that one.
Nokia's do it too.
We're talking about laptop preventative maintenance here, and we're talking about managing data files and integrity. Can make sure that all of your files are happy and cool. I used to know somebody who, no names mentioned, used to store all of their files in the root directory of their computer. It was just quicker to put them in C:\, and boy oh boy did this particular person have trouble finding things when there were 500 files in the root directory, and we had little words about that. And now that doesn't happen as much anymore. Try not to do that. Folders are there for a reason.
We were talking about excessive moisture and stuff. Guys, I know it's fun to read a book while you're in the shower or whatever, but maybe your laptop doesn't need to go into the restroom with you. When I found out my sister did that, I about had a fit.
Absolutely. And perhaps you might want to look at some Bluetooth speakers. See, we talked about Bluetooth earlier in this chapter. You can get Bluetooth speakers, and if you get some nice cheap ones, you can take those into the bathroom and leave your laptop outside and start your book playing, and that will be much better for your book and stuff like that. So that's certainly a one way of doing it.
What about those little old FM transmitter things, like where you could stick a thing in your laptop and pick it up on a radio?
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah, they still exist. I've got a couple of them. I tend to find having a couple of rechargeable batteries is useful for that, because a lot of them run off AA's or AAA's, and they tend to run the batteries down a fair bit. And you don't want to get to the point of Brandon Sanderson's really good books and get like to, you know, three chapters before the end and the batteries in your transmitter go flat, or the rest of the bath might not be as much fun because you don't know what happens to everybody.
Think Geek actually has this thing, and it's mainly for kids, but it's a speaker that looks like a rubber ducky, and then there's a little transmitting egg thing that you use that you hook up to your MP3 player or whatever, and it's supposed to get kids to actually, like, you know, have more fun in the bath and actually let you give them a bath and stuff because they have something to listen to. But I was thinking it would be cool to have one and just put it in the tub. I think it sounds pretty fun.
I wish I had one of those when I was young.
I'm feeling a bit old-fashioned here. I want to know why kids have to have all of this stuff pumped at them from such a young age. We all didn't have iPods and iPhones and all that when I was that age. We used to sit and alone with our own thoughts and thought about things. Make your preventative maintenance schedule. Figure out when you're going to do things, how you're going to do them, how long it's going to take, and make sure you do them, is essentially what you do about schedules. Defragging, scan disking, cleaning screens with dust-free, lint-free, dry cloths, as it says here in the notes. Do not use Windex on your LCD, it can damage it, they say on the notes. If you don't have a schedule, make it with your manager or whatever and have some routines so that things get cleaned. Computers can get really festy and awful in work environments, and it's very important that they get cleaned and stuff. I don't know whether people used to remember with the ball mice, they used to get really filthy and the mouse would stop working and you could clean all the mice and they would start working again once you got all the gunk out of the rollers.
I remember when I was in middle school, we were always asked at the end of the day to turn the mice upside down because people used to steal the ball out of the mouse, and they wanted to make sure that nobody did that when they left.
Things you should be doing are cleaning, hard drive maintenance, and software updates. In other words, they've got this little thing that says, when cleaning a laptop, be proactive, not reactive. Isn't that funky? Okay, keep the stuff away from the laptop. Don't empty the coffee in there in the first place. Don't do all of the things that they said you shouldn't do. Clean stuff up before it gets really awful. The usual deal, guys. I mean, if you care about this computer and it is your life, and it lets you get things running and stuff, then perhaps you would like to keep it in running condition, because that would mean that you would be able to use it and you would be happier. It's like the people who take their car out and it breaks down because they haven't had it serviced in 5 years. You can use compressed air for cleaning laptops. mild cleaning solution, cotton swabs, and soft lint-free cleaning cloth. Some of the ones that you clean glasses with are really good for that. Glasses as in the things that you put on your eyes, as in, you know, that help old Harold see. Spectacles, yes. Unplug the power before you clean it. That stands with, you know, to reason, but you know, you do have to say this. Take the battery out if you can. If it's a Mac, well, just be careful because you can't take the battery out of them. You're cleaning the exterior case, the cooling vents, the I/O ports, the display, and the keyboard. If it's obvious that the laptop needs to be cleaned, clean it. Don't wait for the next scheduled maintenance. I don't know why they need to say that, but there it is, okay? Maybe you just go, oh, well, you know, it'll be cleaned next week. No, don't put it off. Make sure you defrag your hard drive, keep your hard drive organized, clear out your temporary files. You may wish to consider using a program such as CCleaner to do that, although make sure you know what it's going to delete and how it's going to work before you do that. You can have reduced performance if it's trying to search through files to find things. You have disk cleanup, which gets rid of your temporary files, and if you want it to, some restore points, and disk defragmenter. We covered all that last lecture, so I'm not going to cover it again. Disk cleanup is Microsoft safe, and it's kind of cool, and it cleans up temporary internet files and a whole lot of other things. If you haven't used it, have a look. You can free yourself up quite a bit of disk space sometimes, especially if you've got lots of memory dumps. And it shows you how to run it in Windows XP. And it shows you how to run it in newer versions of Windows. And we have pictures of the defragger, and we have pictures of disk cleanup. It's important to keep your stuff organized because you've got to manage the way that the data is stored. Obviously, if you've got desktops and laptops, you've got to find ways of keeping the files backed up, and you've got to keep the files in synchronization between the two systems. You can use My Documents, and you can make a folder structure. My ex-mother-in-law didn't believe you could make a folder structure in My Documents, and they were all under the letter you wrote to such and such on June 21.doc, and then she wondered why she couldn't find them. Try and make the file structures similar on the desktop and the laptop, because it makes copying things around easier. That way you can use things like Karen's Replicator, Syncback, or Robocopy to keep files synchronized between the desktop and the laptop. You can also put them on optical discs or portable drives. A lot of people underrate the value of optical disc backups. If you can burn a whole stack of stuff to a DVD, they're like 50 cents to a dollar for a DVD, and you can put it away somewhere safe, hopefully labelling it somehow, and get data back off it in the event of a problem. Make sure that data from one computer doesn't overwrite data on the other computer. This can be quite problematic. If you get a confirm message, make sure that you do want to copy the files from one to the other, especially if it reckons the destination is newer on the computer. And it says, careful, don't cut instead of copy. That can be bad as well.
Yeah, always make absolutely sure that you want to move something before you cut it.
Now we're reviewing the troubleshooting process. So I'm not going to do that right now. I'm going to ask that everybody read that section for next week, and then right at the beginning of next week, we will ask people whether they have any questions on the troubleshooting process.
Please also read the common problems and solutions, or you will probably miss exam questions.
That goes on and on and on. Probably very, very important stuff. And it tells you how to replace RAM and replace hard drives, how to replace optical drives, battery replacement, PC expansion card replacement, hot swappable removable stuff. See, these notes are going to be an excellent excellent resource. Once you finish this course, you can go back and look at these.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is the end. Anybody got any questions?
I have a question that I probably should have asked at the beginning of the class, but I was kind of distracted feeding my face. Regarding Event Viewer and InjectDisk, for some reason my results are not showing up. I mean, I can't even seem to find that I ran the thing. What should it show? I mean, it should show something that would obviously recognize, right?
If you run check disk, it doesn't put anything in the event log, to my knowledge, does it?
I think it... I don't know. The lab seems to think it does, but I've never seen it.
No, neither have I.
Okay, well, that's... I was going by the lab, because I wasn't... I've honestly, ashamedly, have used Event Viewer very little, so I thought maybe
I put stuff in a file on the C drive.
I know, it saves lost file fragments in... Yeah, it saves file 000.chk and stuff if there are damaged file fragments.
Right, but I thought, like, if there was a... I thought it put results in there, too, in the log file.
When the lab, it says there's a log file created if you're, you have the disk open, and if it's not the system disk, if you leave it open when you are trying to, you know, or you're running it, when you're setting it to run, I guess when it runs the next time, that even if there are no errors, it will create a log, is what it says.
But yeah, we've never found it. So...
Well, we'll look in the Microsoft knowledge base and get the answer for that.
Yeah, I've been looking around a little bit too, but I hadn't found it yet. But well, how should I answer that question? Those questions right now? Should I just say that I can't find it? That it's not showing up, or what? Should I leave them blank, or what should I do?
You're actually supposed to look at the output of check disk as you run it. And you run it against a drive that's not your primary drive. That's how we've been getting people to look at it. As opposed to the log, then you can say that you couldn't find the log, but generally what we do is we get people to run check disk on a thumb drive or a removable hard drive and actually look at the output, and that's how you can answer the questions as to how many passes does it do and all of that sort of good stuff.
How many passes it does is in the Chapter 12 notes.
It is actually.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know
day.
The answer. I know the answer, but I wanted to see it actually doing. And with NVDA, do I need to do that with JAWS, or will NVDA show me that? Because I can.
NVDA will show you that.
You can also pipe it to a text file in real time as an output. If you put the greater than sign and then the name for the text file, it will actually create a text file and spit out the output to that text file. Which is very useful. That's how I did like almost all my command line stuff for Kavi. And then I just copy and paste.
Yeah,
it's great.
Since they told us to run that from the not from the command line, I was doing exactly as the lab said, but I was stupid me. I didn't even think that I could do that. I mean, I know about that piping it to a text file. So
oh, no, well, I mean, it doesn't work for the one where you restart your computer, but I'm thinking, like, for all the other command line tools that didn't involve that, like the list one where you have to do the different lists and columns and things.
So certainly, guys, I mean, NVDA will read that stuff out. And in fact, if I remember correctly, if you do have a number pad available to you, the default object review in command prompt with 7 and 9 will move you up and down inside the command prompt window, which is really quite nice.
It does. It does very nicely. In the command line, it's nice in the command line. It's very comfortable.
Just before we go, if... just a quick thing, if people could do their best to submit each lab as they complete it, I'd really appreciate it. I know Grace had asked for, you know, the 21st to be when these labs are due, and I know I'm going to get loads and loads and loads of them, and doing one student's batch of 10 labs, well, not 10 in this chapter, takes a lot more time.
Yes, please have a care for your instructor. We may need to... hit the alcohol if we get 37 labs from you, because that's a lot of marking. We enjoy marking your labs.
Trying to catch up.
Alright guys, any other queries, questions before I hit stop?